You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm very pleased to welcome to the show, for the very first time, Shia Kappas, who's a political reporter for Politico, which a lot of our listeners I know are familiar with and follow, and she's also the author of the daily newsletter, Illinois Politico, which is must reading if you want to really follow and understand Illinois politics and government. She's here today to take a look back at the Illinois primary election results from last week, and then look ahead to the fall race, which has already been shaped by several major events in the days after the election. Shia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to be here.
Well, what do you think was the biggest headline coming out of the election last week? We got some national publicity on this, but what was the major takeaway, do you think?
I was surprised by the numbers in the Republican governor race. You saw Darren Bailey literally trounce Richard Urban. We knew that polls had him ahead, but I really was surprised at the extent that he beat Urban. And I was surprised at some of the numbers on the Democrat side, too. Alexei Chmielewicz beat Anna Valencia 2-1, practically. And Delia Ramirez defeated Gil Villegas by a much larger margin than I had anticipated. So that was interesting and showed the way primary voters were motivated. The far right was motivated to get out there and vote. The far left was motivated to get out there and vote. And anybody who might have been in the middle, maybe not so much.
Yeah, and that I've had other guests on the show talk about. That's kind of concerning, where we're losing the middle. But this is where, in a primary system like in Illinois, that's where the heart of the voters, the base, seem to be these days. You mentioned the Republican governor's primary. Donald Trump, former President Trump, came out and endorsed Bailey towards the end. Do you think that had anything to do at all with the governor's primary in the end, how it turned out, or was that just was Trump just trying to get on at the last minute on the bandwagon?
Yeah, I think the latter. I mean, I think Bailey had it in the bag. He didn't need Trump's support, but he wanted it, and maybe there were some voters out there who were motivated because of Donald Trump supporting him. And because of that endorsement, though, he'll be able to carry that in the general election, too. And that may be, more beneficial to him to get conservatives out to vote in November.
One of the things that happened, and for our listeners who may not follow politics as much, but it was kind of a rare occurrence that it used to be a rare occurrence. It's happening more and more, where the incumbent governor, J.B. Pritzker, actually got engaged in the Republican primary. Can you kind of share a little bit about that and what impact that may have had on the ultimate outcome?
Yeah, that was a humongous national story, and it's happening in smaller levels across the country, but Governor Pritzker and the Democratic Governors Association poured $40 million into ads that promoted Bailey as being so conservative, so anti-abortion, so pro-gun rights, and from a Democratic perspective, that's so terrible. Pritzker defended it, saying, if I'm going to face him in November, I want people to know what he's like, so he started early. But what it did, it's kind of a quiet little dog whistle to tell conservatives, yeah, this is the more conservative guy. He's more conservative than Richard Urban. And the reason that Governor Pritzker and the DGA did that is because they likely saw Richard Urban, who is more moderate, being a greater challenge to Pritzker had he made it through to November. So by pushing Ervin out, letting conservatives know that he's not a true conservative. That puts Bailey in the race, and in a November election, in a state that's pretty blue, even though I like to think it's somewhat purple because we did have a Republican governor recently, but it shows that Pritzker knew that he could defeat Bailey more easily than he could defeat Ervin.
It seems like that's
exciting, like for political nerds, it's very dramatic, and there's a lot of debate about, you know, is it right or wrong to do that? Is it just kind of icky, or is just that's just the political game, you know? It ain't beanbag, as they say.
It's an emerging trend. I remember across the river down to our southwest, Claire McCaskill's U.S. Senate race, they did this back, I forgot what year, maybe 2006 or one of those years, and we're able to help the Republicans choose their nominee who they thought was the weaker candidate. And that's happened here, and it happened in other races last Tuesday as well. I don't know. What are you hearing from people that you talk to about this?
Yeah, now, to your point, McCaskill wrote the book on this. I mean, she is, you know, when people talk about what Pritzker and the DGA did, they refer to McCaskill because she found success doing it. And it's not new in Illinois. The DGA did it with Jeannie Ives when she was running against Bruce Rauner. But they only put in, I think, $1 million. And it got her close. She almost defeated Bruce Rauner. So maybe the logic was, okay, it nearly worked. Maybe we put a lot of money in this time, and it really will work, and it did.
Richard Ervin is a fascinating story in Illinois politics. I know we all got to know him very well, and from a positive standpoint, but later from a negative. But kind of share a little bit about what you know about his background and how he emerged to become the leading candidate of at least some very wealthy individuals in Illinois.
Yeah, I'm not sure we do know Richard Ervin all that well. He does have a great backstory. You know, he came from super humble beginnings. He served in the military. He put himself through school. He became an attorney, a defense attorney, and a prosecutor. Became mayor. But we, you know, in a primary like this, where conservative voters in the Republican Party want to know, who did you vote for? Did you vote for Donald Trump? He was the former president. He's leading the Republican Party as a former president. Did you vote for him? And Richard Ervin would never say. And because of that, there was a mistrust to some extent. And it's the great challenge of the Republican Party in Illinois. His handlers would say, does it matter? People don't really care about whether he voted for Trump. They care about the economy. Yes, but if you are a Trump supporter, you want to know that you are voting for somebody who also is a Trump supporter. And that message didn't get through. And then as abortion rights became a bigger subject, he did acknowledge that he is pro-life, but he didn't answer all the questions that were always posed to him. And there was now it'll go down as a famous press conference that kind of went off the rails for him, where he basically repeated catchphrases that he'd used in previous meetings with the media, saying, you know, that's just what J.B. Pritzker wants you to ask, instead of really being honest and answering questions. And the media just kept throwing questions at him one after another, and he left, and it just wasn't, it looked like it was out of control. And I don't know if that was the beginning of the end, but it wasn't a good, it was a difficult time at that point for his campaign.
You know, it surprises me, and some of the friends I have in politics in Chicago and Springfield, that for all the money that Irvin had available and for his background, which was impressive, as you said, that it just didn't seem the campaign was very well done, the messaging. Is that what you're picking up? Could a better campaign have helped him, or was it just the changing nature of the Illinois Republican Party plus $40 million in negative ads was just too much?
Well, his campaign team will say it was hard. They knew that the DGA would come after them. They didn't know the extent that the DGA would come after them. And there's another little element to this. The far right, Dick Uihlein, another super conservative billionaire, he gave money towards ads for Bailey, and that also hurt Richard Irvin. So Richard Irvin was getting negative ads from the DGA that helped Bailey, and ads that, you know, attacked him from Richard Uihlein. So he was getting it from the right and the left. And that's millions and gazillions of dollars, you know. So suddenly his $50 million doesn't look like very much, even though it was a lot. Could it have been spent differently? Maybe. I've heard a lot of reports that they inundated people, especially in southern Illinois, with mailers.
Yeah.
That turns people off sometimes. I don't know that that is what did it, but, there's a lot of, Monday morning quarterbacking on what they could have done differently. I don't know that they could have, except to find a way to answer questions about Trump more honestly. And maybe you trust that if you're a moderate Republican, you say, hey, I liked his policies in office, but I didn't like the kind of guy he was personally. Maybe that would be okay with Trump voters. I don't know. Maybe not.
It seemed like there were some interesting, if you look at the totality of the results, there were some interesting results also from state legislative races as far as what we'll call insurgent candidates winning over more traditional party-backed candidates. Is that, you can share a little more about what you know, but in Illinois, it seems like, as you mentioned earlier, if for the Republicans to win, the playbook was it had to be somebody from the middle of the road. But it seems like legislative races, congressional races, all races are pointing up to more of this hyper-partisanship that we see in other states.
Right. I think it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, the far left and the far right, and maybe not even far left, but super progressive, they found great success in the primaries. And so did the far right. And we knew that the right would be coming out because they were motivated. They're more motivated in a primary. Will it play out in November? We'll just have to see. I mean, now everything's shifting again in November. So I don't know, with what's happened in Highland Park and the debate about guns. We thought abortion was going to be the big discussion point, which it still will be, but I think guns and gun laws are also going to be a major talking point, so that could change everything too.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Shia Kappas, who's the author of Illinois Politico. You can get it for free signing up, and it gives you information every day on what's going on in politics and government. She's also a reporter for the National Politico, which I subscribe to as well. This is part of all the too much that I read every day on this, but it's good to be informed, and she's an outstanding reporter and analyst. And she's talking today a little bit about the results from the Illinois primary, and we're going to shift focus and look ahead to November now. It's just amazing how much everything has changed just in the past couple weeks as far as the issues that were prominent. And we've talked about this a little. Do you get the feeling, Shia, that, I mean, again, the traditional way Illinois elects Republicans, at least in the last 30 years, is they were middle of the road. They've nominated Darren Bailey, who was acknowledged as the most conservative candidate. Is there Do you think, and do your sources say, is there a way for Bailey to win this thing based on how Illinois is set up politically? Are we in for another surprise this fall, or is it the odds just against it too much because of Illinois being a blue state, as you had mentioned?
You never know what's going to happen. Who knows? Maybe there will be some twist and turn that changes people's minds. But right now, the thinking is that this is J.B. Pritzker's to win all the way. And now, especially with what's happened in Highland Park and the debate about guns, you have Republican Darren Bailey, who, a great part of his primary campaign was talking about the Second Amendment, and his advertising had him with a rifle shooting, giant piles of paper representing, giant piles of paper representing the state budget, and he would tote a gun on his shoulder. So I don't know if we're going to see that kind of advertising now going into November. And he'll have to answer to that, because Governor Pritzker is really making this not just a statewide concern, but a national talking point. Politico, my colleagues in who cover the White House, just did a story about how, J.B. Pritzker's response to this shooting and the anger and the fury that he feels for it is really what people are talking about, not Joe Biden's, somewhat quiet response to it all. And, you can bet that Pritzker's going to carry that through November. And so Bailey really will have to, he'll have to have some talking points about why we keep the Floyd or don't keep the Floyd,
Yeah. Well, it seems like, it seems forever ago, but 2 weeks ago before the Supreme Court decision on guns and before Highland Park, crime was a top issue, and Bailey and the Republicans were making the point that we needed to go back and change the crime reform bill that was passed by the General Assembly, and also that guns were there for protection. If police weren't able to do their job, people needed guns to protect them. And that seems a long time ago, but that was an argument that might have gotten some legs, say, in the suburbs with some of those key voters. But I'm not so sure now.
Well, right. Look at Highland Park. There were police all over that parade, and they have guns, and they couldn't stop this guy from doing that. I mean, how do you explain that? It's it's going to be a hard discussion to say that people should have guns when police on the scene with guns weren't able to stop that guy. So, I don't know.
It's going
to be...
It'll be interesting.
It'll be a hot topic.
It'll be interesting to see how they try to spin that. I'm curious too, and for our listeners, the traditionally, especially in the last 70 years, the party that is holding the presidency in off-year elections loses seats down ballot, and so the Democrats are facing headwinds nationally. Because people are more motivated to vote if they don't have the White House. I think that's the theory, and academics have proved that. So with that in mind, do you think that the decision on repealing Roe v. Wade and the gun decision, what Highland Park, will that fire up Democrats, you think, in Illinois and perhaps nationwide to kind of reverse the motivation deficit that they might face?
Well, Democrats definitely want that, and they're hoping that. I think I just read something, though, that there's concern that the Roe decision isn't motivating people enough quite yet. So I don't know. And I wanted to go back to your point about, blathered on and didn't answer your question about where a few weeks ago or a month or so ago, crime in Chicago or in Illinois was a major concern. But the Chicago Police Department just came out with statistics that show the fourth month in a row of crime dropping. And even though, the July 4th holiday in Chicago had, dozens of 50-some shootings, it was less than it was a year ago and less than it was 2 years before that. So if crime numbers continue to drop month to month. By the time November comes around, I don't know if that argument will be as strong, you know, for Republicans to hold on to.
I think sometimes I think, too, you know, James Carville had the famous saying, it's the economy, stupid, and that might favor the Republicans a little bit, mainly because of gas prices. And it's so ubiquitous. I mean, you go out and your mood changes when you go fill up,
right,
and it's over $5
right.
a gallon. Is that still a hot issue up there, or is that being supplanted a little bit with some of the things that have happened here recently?
Well, I had a story in Playbook today, Illinois Playbook today, about gas prices around the country are falling, so the numbers in the story were still much lower than they are in Chicago area. I'm not sure what gas is where you are. It's under $6 here. It was hovering a little bit over $6 in a few places a week or so ago, but now it's under by 30 cents or so. So will it keep falling? That would be good.
We're at 5.11 here.
5.11. Oh, see, I got to get down there for some cheaper gas.
I go to Iowa because it's even cheaper there. I'm about a half hour away, and I try to plan events to go over there. But I just have a couple more questions, Shia.
Yeah.
This is the first cycle that Mike Madigan hasn't been Speaker of the House and Democratic Party Chairman, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Is he still looming over the Democratic Party? Are some of his close associates still involved? Does he still have influence, or is he pretty much divorced from everything?
I think he, for the most part, is out of the election process. And you saw that, you know, a few key allies of his, you mentioned earlier about legislative races, Mike Zalewski, who was a key ally, a state representative, he's out. And a few others lost in primaries, which was really surprising. And part of that is because Mike Madigan's election machine wasn't there to help prop them up. And it goes to the point we talked about earlier. There's just an insurgent, you know, from the left that helped push those folks out. But the former speaker does have allies who are still on the Democratic Party, the Illinois Democratic Party Committee, the folks that run the party in general. I don't know, you know, to the extent that their voice is makes a difference. Robin Kelly, who runs the party, is not part of the Madigan machine. But there are other folks there who were allies of the former speaker at one time or another. So
I'm glad you mentioned Robin Kelly, because one of the more obscure races that was set up was for some of these seats on the Illinois Democratic Central Committee, and it had a background battle between the governor and Kelly, and even Senator Durbin. How did that turn out? Do you know yet?
We still don't know.
Don't know. Okay.
Because the way they do these Central Committee elections, it's by different counties, and not all the counties post everything that far down the ballot. So they have to turn their numbers in to, I guess, the main election board, and then they're being compiled. I think we will know in the next week where that's at. And there are a few races that are real, that people have their eye on to see whether the person who Governor Pritzker backed won, or whether the person that, Dick Durbin backed won. And the reason those are important is because those folks, after they have won, they will meet probably later this month, early August maybe, and they will vote on who the next chairman of the Democratic Party is. And the question is whether does J.B. Pritzker have enough support and allies with the weighted vote, the way it all works out, will he have enough support to decide who he wants to lead the party versus who Dick Durbin would like to see lead the party?
Final question.
Dick Durbin is allied with Robin Kelly, by the way.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut in.
Oh, no, you're good.
Yeah, that's an interesting intra-party battle. Final question here for Shia Kappas. We've got about 2 minutes left, but interesting you talked about Governor Pritzker's comments on Highland Park getting national publicity. He also, I won't say snuck, but he did travel up to New Hampshire here in the last week, which, you know, anytime somebody goes there, it raises speculation. Are you hearing, or is he, are his people serious about potentially seeking the White House if President Biden doesn't seek re-election?
His people are not saying a single thing like that. Neither is he. He is in it to run for governor. However, if you heard that speech, it was a great speech. I've heard, I think, probably all of Governor Pritzker's speeches, and that was a very powerful speech. And it was the kind of speech that really, he dug deep and talked about who he was and where he came from and how he came to be, you know, head of Illinois, how he came to lead the state. And it was the kind of speech that introduced himself to Democrats in New Hampshire. This wasn't just a rah-rah speech for Democratic governors, which is what he pitched to the media. It was really a powerful speech that talked about who he is and where he came from. And that's what people do when they want to run for president. Now, maybe it's all coincidence. Maybe it was just a really great speech. But it's the kind of speech that was good enough that has everybody thinking, what happens if President Biden doesn't run? So,
well, I think at the beginning when you said he denied it and his people denied or stayed quiet about it, that told you all you had to know. So.
Yeah. They insist, you know, that he was out east on a trip to promote governors who support abortion rights. And that is what he is. I mean, that is very important to him. He's given money across the country. He's supporting candidates across the country. So that's not false at all. That is exactly what he's passionate about.
Okay.
It's just very interestingly coincidental.
Yes, what a coincidence. Well, Shia Kappas is my guest today on Heartland Politics, talking about Illinois politics and government. Always interesting, and in these last couple of days, really kind of dark and depressing on what's been going on in Highland Park. But I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you've been busy reporting on that, and would love to have you back at some point.
I would love to be back. Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.